And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mr. Fulp, I trust you've been well.
I have, Rob, and you?
Quite well. Went to Mexico for the very first time in my life, if you can believe it. Never been down there. Took the family down to Playa del Carmen for a week of kind of lying around on a beach, checking out some Mayan ruins. Great time, but boy, oh boy, was it hot. I'm not complaining. I knew what I was heading into, but hot and humid down there. I needed my dose. I needed my dose of summer heat, though, because it's been a cool summer up here in Canada.
Well, I imagine you have a Turista suntan to go along with it. I hope not a burn.
I did not get burned. I slapped on the protection quite heavily. This is the second part of our special focus on oil. Mickey, last time out, we delved into how oil was formed, the different types of oil, early discoveries, its uses, both past and present. Today, really an assessment, I guess, of current production and consumption levels, factors that are moving the price and whatnot. Let's begin with global production. I think it's pretty safe to say, isn't it, that the world today is awash in oil? We've got tons of this stuff all over the place.
We do not seem to be running out of oil. Production was dominated by Russia in the early 1900s. By the 40s to 50s, the U.S. Became the world's number one producer. In the 60s, U.S. production started going down, and that led to the theory of peak oil. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but mm-hmm. The Saudis, Russia, and the U.S. Going downhill, but the previous two increasing. In the 2010s, we've seen a bit of a reversal. Russia is still the number one producer, but not by much. U.S. Mm. was second in 2013. Now, of course, the Saudis were third, but they can produce about as much oil as they want. The world consumes about 90 million barrels a day. The reserves are still very much dominated by the Middle East at 80%. Most of the resources, though, are in your country of Canada and Venezuela, and those are in the tar oil sands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the oil shales, too, but the latter two are both very high cost to extract. You know, arguably, oil is one of the three to four most important commodities in the world.
Talk to us about the demand side of the situation, because I know I've seen reports from the International Energy Agency, for example, reducing estimates for growth in demand.
Well, it kind of depends on your viewpoint. The world consumption is basically continuing to increase, but that's being dominated by different countries. The U.S. is still the world's largest consumer at 18.5 million barrels a day, but up and coming is China at 10.3 million barrels a day. It imports 57% of its oil. The real story here is the major consumers who produce no oil or very little oil, less than 10%, those are dominated by countries in Southeast Asia, Japan, India, South Korea, and also, and no surprise here, by European Union countries. Mm-hmm. Germany produces only about 2% of its own oil. Then you have countries like Spain and France and Italy and the Netherlands and Turkey, and they are totally dependent on imported oil. The production is going down and consumption is going up for a number of countries, particularly Mexico. Mexico is in a future world of hurt. It was a net exporter for a number of years. It is now barely meeting its own demand, and that is increasing.
What I found really fascinating in doing some research on this, Mickey, is the amount of oil being pumped by the United States. I've seen, the U.S. pumping the most oil it's produced in 27 years. The U.S. is certainly becoming more and more sufficient in supplying its own needs, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, and demand is going down in the U.S. as our cars get more efficient. And we referred to before that oil is basically used to fuel internal combustion engines. But this kind of has destroyed the notion, and some people, of course, will debate me on this, but the concept of peak oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, peak oil is in effect in different fields and regions of the world. I mean, you have decline curves, so you make these discoveries, you extract the easily gotten oil, and then production goes down in specific fields, specific regions, specific districts, etc. However, world production keeps increasing. OPEC certainly has spare capacity, especially the Saudis. But I think it's probably a relatively well-known fact, and if it isn't, I'm going to emphasize it, that 70% of the world's known oil reserves are left in the ground. And this is because of the difficulty of extraction. But mm-hmm. what's happened in the U.S. With our good old Yankee ingenuity is we are finding ways to get this hard-to-extract oil out of the ground. Especially in the shale
mm-hmm.
oil regime.
Yeah, well, it's kind
shales
of the
are the source rocks. Historically, they have not been able to be extracted, and we have now developed the technology through hydrofracking, which is not a new technology, been around since the 50s,
mm-hmm.
but especially horizontal drilling, and now we're starting to exploit the shale oil. So U.S. production is something it's at its high since the late 60s right now,
mm-hmm.
And it is increasing, and we are exploiting different areas. North Dakota is now the second largest producing state in the U.S., and if you look back 10 years, it was barely on the radar screen.
Yeah, well, it wasn't all that long ago, Mickey, where the technology was not in place to start extracting oil from the tar sands in Alberta. So you're referring to technological advancements. We've got engineers, scientists, industrialists working on new ways of getting oil out of the ground. And when you talk about, you threw out that 70% figure, so lots of stuff there. Should we forget all about peak oil then? Is it a topic?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's fallacy. I mean, the world is awash in hydrocarbons. You know, we had a period, especially during the mid-Paleozoic, a couple of hundred million years, where the world was essentially shallow seas and swamps, and we formed lots of coal and lots of petroleum, and petroleum has been formed since Precambrian, so we have lots of areas that are still totally unexplored, especially offshore. Now, this is difficult, more difficult, deep water, tight reservoirs, but we have an immense budget of petroleum
mm-hmm.
in the world, and I don't think we're going to run out.
Okay.
Shale oil revolution in the U.S. has been astounding, and there are many other places in the world, China, Poland, South Africa, the list goes on and on and on about places where we know that there are immense resources of oil contained in shales and tight formations and mm-hmm. hard to extract, but very much driven by economics too. As the price of oil has increased, it has been easier to justify drilling for these tight reservoirs, and we expect that to continue.
Yeah, and there's, like you mentioned, there are areas where we know there are abundant reserves of oil. It's just a matter of getting in and getting them, and that brings into context here into the story domestic political policies as well. In the United States, there's always talk about whether to open up more wilderness areas or offshore areas to exploration and drilling activity.
Yeah, and so the offshore U.S. potential is immense. We have from Florida to Maine, the Grand Banks of Newfoundland, which are being exploited now, but the Grand Banks are offshore in Maine too.
Mm-hmm.
There were 56 wells drilled from 1947 to the early 80s off the East Coast, especially in Florida. There is tremendous oil production in Cuba right now, and the aforementioned maritime province, especially around St. John's in Newfoundland. I was on a fishing boat sitting next to an offshore oil platform in Newfoundland a little more than a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we are tied up in this geopolitical thing, especially with the Obama administration. In early 2010, he committed to drilling offshore northeast coast of the U.S. That he reneged on that in late 2010. Now it's revived, but we are just now doing some seismic surveys. Do not look at leases occurring till 2018. Obama will be long gone by then, as the president, but it becomes a matter of political will. You know, we have the Keystone Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
The enviros are campaigning against the dirty oil coming from Canada. Well, the U.S. still imports 8 million barrels a day, and my question, would you rather be importing it from really tough geopolitical situations in the Middle East? We all know what's going on. Libya and Syria, and now Iraq's blown up again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one country after the other. We rather get it from our friends up north. And so we have this Keystone Pipeline. It's built from offshore Louisiana all the way up to Cushing, Oklahoma, which is where the big transfer station is. And all we need to do is get it from Alberta down into central Oklahoma. That's coming, but, you know, Obama needs to win the Senate for the Democrats in the November election,
mm-hmm.
and so now Keystone decision's been postponed until after those elections.
Okay. We ever going to see a price like we saw back in 2008? What did we peak out at? About $147, just under $150 a barrel. Doesn't sound
I think that's very debatable. You know, we haven't really talked about this much, but with all this turmoil, absolute turmoil in the Middle East right now, we've seen WTI go from $106 a barrel two or three weeks ago. It's at $97 a barrel now. And what's happened is we've referred ad infinitum, I think, about oil being the geopolitically most sensitive commodity in the world. But what's happened in the last year or so is the big banks have come out of the speculation. Big U.S. banks, three biggest U.S. banks, are no longer speculating in oil markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've removed some of the volatility from that market. And so the price has gone down. I think everybody would be comfortable with oil in where it's been range-bound over the last couple of years, and basically that's $90 to $110 a barrel. Whether we will ever see a spike like we saw pre-global economic crisis in 2007, I think that's debatable, especially in real dollar terms.
Okay, maybe a quick comment in wrapping up, Mickey. Is this an area of the equity market where you want to put money to work? You know, the Toronto Stock Exchange Composite Index up about 12% year-to-date, a great gain. A big chunk of that has been the result of gains in energy stocks. What are your thoughts about this area of the market going forward?
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the sweet spots in the market, playing the junior oil. E&P's exploration production companies can be quite profitable. You have to be very cautious, though. There seems to be a dichotomy between very small producers with very high risk and the medium-sized speculative companies, if you will. It's a little different than playing the metals, the minerals game, and the fact that because it's big boy football, if you will, the capital expenditures are at least an order of magnitude greater than you will see in the minerals industry. And as a result, companies must take on debt. They have to have revolving lines of credit, and they can become burdened in debt if they're not successful. They can go bankrupt, and we really don't see that very much in the exploration and mining business as much as we do in oil business. So I would encourage people that take a look at small E&P companies to very much focus on their debt and realize that that can be very burdensome, especially when prices fluctuate and go down.
All right, well, let's wrap it up on that note. Mickey, we're going to be back in a couple of weeks. What are you going to put on the plate for us?
Well, Rob, this seems to be the never-ending subject, and we're still going to do carbon. We're probably in show six now, and we're going to get into the environmental consequences of carbon, the carbon cycle. We'll talk about greenhouse gases, climate change, and how that all relates to the carbon industry and the politics that go along with it.
All right, another big topic to tackle. Thanks very much, Mickey, and we'll reconnect in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob. Always my pleasure.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.